When a UC Davis police officer was captured pepper spraying students who were seated on the ground, the image and the video went viral. The incident has called into question the use of force by police in the Occupy protests and the way we think about protests today. Good morning, I'm Veronica Rickard, and I'm glad to be keeping you company this Wednesday morning on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn. This hour, the latest in the pepper spraying incident and a look at where the Occupy protests are going next. Our guests this hour are Bob Ostertag, an associate professor of technocultural studies at the University of California at Davis, Carla Orendorf, a junior at UC Davis, and joining us for a bit today as well, Ian Lee, a freshman at UC Davis, who was involved in a pepper spraying incident there. And we welcome your thoughts this morning. What do you think of police interactions with protesters at UC Davis and the other Occupy protests? And what should the role of police be during a protest? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And our email is talk@wpr.org. And Bob Ostertag, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me in particular. In particular, thank you for having the students who, as you're going to see, can speak very eloquently on their own behalf.
Well, let me see as well if we've got Carla with us next. Carla, are you there? Try checking the line. Carla, are you with us? Okay, looks like we're still trying to get Carla on the line, so we should have her with us shortly. And Bob, tell us what your thoughts were as you watched all of this unfolding.
Well, just outrage. I think my reaction was the same as millions of people all over the world. What's astounding is that the chancellor at the university did not seem to have the same reaction that seemingly everybody else had. She put out statements even 3 days after the fact that just seemed bizarrely disconnected from the real world. The students' reaction, of course, was absolutely inspiring, the way they stuck to their nonviolent posture in the face of such gross brutality. And then I don't know how many of your listeners have seen the chancellor's walk the following day.
I watched that last night on your blog, yeah.
This was an extraordinary thing where the following day the chancellor called a press conference and the building that, and students gathered, because the students are just livid, you know, they're just livid. And they gathered, they surrounded the building that she was having the press conference in. And she tried to, play this to the media that somehow the students were taking her hostage. But once again, implying a violent motive where none was. And the students were chanting, "Just go, you can leave, we're peaceful." And she holed up in that building for several hours. And finally, the students, using their extremely cumbersome and to many adults frustrating ultra-democratic consensus-based decision-making process, decided to sit down and be silent. And the chancellor walks several blocks from the building to her car past 1,000 seated, silent students. And it is an absolutely extraordinary moment and well captured in the video, I think. I highly recommend. I would love it that eventually what Davis is known for is not Lieutenant Pike pepper spraying the students, but the students' response of this extraordinary example of the power of nonviolent protest.
You could have heard a pin drop as she walked. It was amazing. It must have been one of the longest walks of her life, but it was pretty astounding.
I don't think she's ever going to forget that.
No. No. And it was a powerful thing to watch. I'll give you that. And all of these images that have come out of UC Davis, the pepper spraying, this walk of the chancellor in the silence, it does have an incredible emotional connotation to watch some of this stuff. You feel it in your gut as the students get pepper sprayed. What do you think went wrong that day?
Everything. absolutely everything. There was nothing right about it. From the very beginning, the idea that, in my view, if police show up at an activity like that, dressed like they just stepped out of an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, with body armor and helmets and visors that they can hardly see out of, and rifles and pepper spray, and from the moment they've arrived, the situation has already escalated to the point that nothing good can happen. So right from the beginning, everything was wrong. there's an excellent video that the students have put together, which I highly recommend your viewers take a look at. If they go to YouTube now and type in UC Davis pepper spray, one of the first videos that comes up is this video where they've taken four separate cell phone camera video recordings and edited them together, so the screen is divided into four quadrants, but they're all synchronized, so you get to see the event from four separate angles at the same time. And it provides more context for what happened, and the result is even more chilling. You see Lieutenant Pike calmly walk up to one of the students, one of the seated students, and tell him that he's going to be shot if he doesn't move. And the student looks at him incredulously and says, "You're going to shoot me for sitting here? Sure, go ahead and shoot me." And Pike sort of calmly saunters away back to the group of police, and then, you know, pulls out his pepper spray and calmly saunters back and starts dousing everybody in pepper spray. It's unbelievable.
I think that's part of what's so disturbing about that is how calm the officer seems as he's pepper spray. At least it looks that way in the videos that are online. And I think that we have our second guest, Carla, with us today. Carla, are you with us?
I am. Hello.
Great. Thanks. Carla Orendorf with us now. She's a junior at UC Davis. And Carla, were you there that day?
I was. I was sitting down and linking arms with many friends and new friends that I had made that week. It was a pretty incredible timeline of events, and I feel like my campus became a community that day, and even more so after the pepper spray. But I was there, but just seeing my friends get, dragged out of the crowd and pepper sprayed and handcuffed in front of us, like, it was absolutely awful to watch. And after that, just seeing friends, hugging friends and having my face burn, as a result of hugging them and trying to comfort them was something I will never forget.
Now, since the incident, there have been some voices that have come forward, some consultants in police departments who said that this was justifiable under usual terms in various police manuals that they're citing. I don't have the names at my fingertips, but because there were some students who were resisting, and maybe that those students weren't captured in the videos that have been so striking for people, but it did happen, and this was the cause of it, and it was reasonable. What would you say to that?
Well, I kind of want to echo Bob. When they come down in full riot gear with military-grade pepper spray, they are looking to incite, in my opinion, they are looking, to really incite something. And I feel like as students, like, we were on our quad at 3 p.m., we were discussing issues and gathering together, and I didn't think of us as a threat in any way. And, you know, we were sitting down linking arms. And I feel like the use of force there, like, can't be justified in any way. Like, there is no excuse for that. And the fact that, you know, they're saying that it was appropriate, like, just, you know, it was the procedure and that they can hide behind, I guess, protocol is just inhumane to me as someone that was there and really felt, you know, the weight of all of that, of a decision that they decided to make. It was real and it was horrible. It was violence that I don't understand how it could possibly be justified in any way.
Carla, did you see anyone resisting or giving the officers trouble?
We were holding on to each other because we were terrified, and we realized, I felt like we were the only support that we could give each other at that point. There were people with cameras that were getting extremely close to officers, but no one ever handled or touched a police officer from what I could tell. There wasn't, and there were, you know, they also say that they were trapped by the circle of students sitting down, and that also just wasn't true, like, from clearly watching the footage. So
what is the feeling like on the UC Davis campus right now, especially in regards to the chancellor? And Carla, we'll start with you, and then we'll go to Bob.
I think, you know, there are a lot of different opinions about our chancellor right now. I know, for myself, she didn't act in a way that was loving or protecting, and I feel like she's incredibly disconnected from where the students are at right now, and I just don't think, I have no confidence in her ability to do her job any longer, and a large number of students, I would say, would agree with that, that she cannot effectively do her job at this point. Last night we had a town hall meeting called by the chancellor, and students presented the physical form of the 80,000-person petition that's been signed online, and she didn't really take any accountability for that. She dismissed it as saying that, you know, it wasn't from the Davis community. And I feel like, you know, 80,000 people, like, understand what just happened, and they want you to resign. And she's, you know, I feel like in order to protect her job, she has to dismiss that. But, I mean, dismissing has been a part of their procedure, and not listening to student concerns has been exactly what they're doing, and this is where we are now. We're the consequence of their failure to act.
Well, we have a little bit of audio of her addressing the students in the aftermath of this incident. Let's hear what she has to say.
I'm here to apologize. I really feel horrible for what happened on Friday. If you think you don't want to be students in a university like we had on Friday, I'm just telling you, I don't want to be the chancellor of the university we had on Friday.
A clip there of Chancellor Katehi responding to students and a huge assembled crowd after the pepper spraying incident at the UC Davis campus. And Bob, what goes through your mind when you hear her talking? Do you think she's saying the right things, and does she mean it?
I think she means it, and I think now she's coming pretty close to saying the right things, but it's awfully late in the day. What she's saying now is markedly different than what she said in the first 1, 2, and even 3 days after the event. And this is, goes back to what we were talking about how startling it was that the
immediate response of people all over the world that was just horror and, you know, an immediate visceral gut response that this, that, you know, something terribly wrong had just happened, did not seem to register on her. And she put out two separate letters to the university community, one the night of the incident and one 24 hours later. And these letters were terrible. They were so utterly tone deaf.
What did they say?
The second letter, which was 24 hours after the incident, the video was already going viral. She sent another letter saying that there had been peaceful protests at the campus over the previous weeks, but that what was happening Friday with students setting up tents on the quad was was not peaceful protest, and had to be done, and was a, I think she called it a major deviation from peaceful protest, and had to be dealt with immediately. There was nothing that was not peaceful about the students setting up their tents on the quad, and mm-hmm. she stuck to her thing that this had to be done for the safety of the students.
Well, she mentioned hygiene and safety.
You know, she's living in another world. At Duke University, students set up tents, live in tents for weeks on end to get in line to buy tickets for football games. The idea that, you know, this is a university, it's a quad, there's public bathrooms in the buildings all around the quad, about 30 yards from where the tents are is a student union where there's about 10 different restaurants and places to get food and coffee. You know, if the students having tents on the quad is a hygiene and health issue, then the chancellor needs to attend some frat parties on campus and take a look at some real health and hygiene issues, or go to a football game. What another thing that is so striking to me is that when it was just the students and the faculty crying out that something terrible had happened, the administration of the school was really not having it and sticking to their initial position that we were sad that pepper spray had to be used, but really we had no other choice. It was only when the national and international media descended upon them and they were getting calls from CNN and everybody else in the world that it began to dawn on them that the world was going to perceive this in a different way than they were perceiving it. And I think since they woke up to that reality, they've changed their tune quite dramatically. And I have no problem with what the chancellor's saying now. At the town hall meeting last night, she said she wanted to drop all the charges against the students. She said that the university would cover the medical expenses of the students. But that should have been said 15 minutes after the incident. I mean, she should have been right out there in the quad expressing outrage and talking. Carla, has she actually asked to meet with the pepper sprayed students?
No, not that I know of.
Yeah, see, this is just a lack of leadership. And I have no personal vendetta against the chancellor. I'm sure she's a wonderful person. I don't know her personally.
Well, you work there and you don't know her personally. Is that usual?
Well, we're a very large university. You know, we have 30,000 students. It's a huge campus. So it's not unusual that a faculty person wouldn't know the chancellor personally. But I think she's living in a bubble. And I think this is not atypical for the leadership of the University of California at all the campuses, their response to the budget cuts and the dismantling of the of public education in California has been so tone deaf, and so, you know, they have some kind of institutional culture there that they are so comfortable in, and even when something like this happens, it doesn't seem to cause that much discomfort. You know, all the media, that suddenly set off alarm bells because that's going to hurt their fundraising. That's going to hurt their student recruitment. You know, so I feel like they're responding more to the tarnishing of the image of the university than they are to the pain experienced by their students.
Let's take a quick break right now, and then we'll come back and start taking phone calls and emails and continue our conversation with Bob Ostertag and Carla Orendorf. Bob is an associate professor at the University of California, Davis, and Carla is a junior there at UC Davis, and she was present at the protest where students were pepper sprayed. And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think the police role should be at protests like these, both at campuses and at other sites around the country as we're seeing now? What would you like to see the police role be, and how do you think it's playing out so far? Our number, 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And you can shoot us an email, too, at talk@wpr.org. I'm Veronica Rickert. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you this Wednesday morning. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn as we talk about the pepper spray incident at the UC Davis campus where police officers pepper sprayed sitting students who were protesting on the quad. And of course, the video has gone viral. It has become kind of an internet meme as well as people Photoshop Professor Officer Pike into some famous paintings like Sunday Afternoon in the Park by Seurat, just to name one of them. So this is something that's attracting a lot of attention and raising questions about the role of police officers in protests and what that role should be and how it's playing out so far. And our guest this morning, Bob Ostertag, an associate professor of technocultural studies at UC Davis, and Carla Orendorf, a junior at that same university, and she was present at the protests. Let's take our first phone call now. We have Tom joining us from Viroqua. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good morning. A dozen years ago, I was present on the front rank of peaceful protesters at the World Trade Organization meeting in Seattle, where the police first started what has been called the police riot, where I was both tear gassed and received, you know, front massive pepper spray to the face. I think there were two major iconic images that sort of competed in the press. One was that of us being attacked by the police, and the other was that of a very small group of anarchists, you know, maybe a dozen, two dozen, who, you know, were breaking windows in the city. And for a long while, it sort of went back and forth between how this whole event was going to be characterized. But I think in the long run, the image of the police riot really held true as being exactly what it was. Just last week, I heard an interview on Democracy Now! With the police chief of Seattle at the time, who is now condemning the militarization of our both campus and civilian police forces in response to this amazingly peaceful response or demonstration that we're seeing all across the country. And I'm very pleased to see that, you know, in Madison, everywhere else, this anarchist element has all but disappeared, and there's an amazing, almost Gandhi-esque spirit of protesters, which I really think is winning the hearts and minds of the American people.
Tom, you use the word militarization, and that's a word that is popping up a lot now. So some people sort of critique the role of police in these protests. What do you think that means as applied to what we're seeing?
Well, it means aggression. We were just you know, peacefully sitting there in a legal area that was permitted, by the thing. The police just charged us, and I myself was personally attacked. My head pulled back, massive pepper spray into the face, and then kicked and bludgeoned down the street. The only thing that gave me any solace was that about a half hour later, while I was still blinded and being treated, I was interviewed by a reporter from the Associated Press, and my quote of sort of an alternate view of what went on there, it essentially for the time became viral within the printed press as, you know, as giving an alternative view to what the how the police were characterizing it, which was far from the truth. I mean, it really was a police riot where they in really full battle gear, just attacked seated peaceful protesters.
Well, Tom, thank you so much for calling and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
And Carla, when you hear Tom's story, What do you think about how it compares to what you've been going through?
Well, I participate before the events at Davis. I've been a participant at Occupy Oakland and had experienced similar violence the night of the strike that was called upon and participated by 50,000 people. So I feel. I've seen many different forms of violence over the past month, and I think it's a testament to the training that police are receiving, and I think that it's not about individual officers and their reactions. I think it is more of a systemic issue, and especially how protesters are being treated. I think we're kind of holding a mirror to that behavior, and it's something that very much concerns me on my campus and across this country. There is violence being waged against people for singing dissent and sharing their ideas and participating in democracy. And I think we're going to have to begin to have a very serious conversation about, what does it mean to protect ourselves and also think of ways to protect each other. And I know we're doing that on my campus right now and thinking of student-run alternatives. And based on models all across the world. It's something that needs to be addressed just for the safety of students and people right now all over the world. So,
what kinds of things could you do to protect yourself, or would you have done anything differently if you would have known that this would have been something that was in the works?
I don't think I would have done anything differently, but I think that safety and security on university campuses needs to be, it's something that students need to be included in. That's a process, I think, that becomes, that's a community decided one. And I think that, we didn't ask, we didn't agree to be pepper sprayed, and I don't think that will ever be an appropriate response again. And I think it's up to us to figure out some of those solutions, and that's the beginning of a really important conversation. And I think that includes parents. I think that includes everybody that makes up the community of a campus, And I'm very excited to have that conversation at Davis, and I think it's something that can, what happens at Davis can affect what happens at the UC level. So there have been many acts of violence. There's there have been hate crimes on my campus recently that the police failed to deal with, and I feel like that's another form of violence. And so we need student input and participation in that is critical.
Well, let's go to our next caller now. Doug is joining us from Pell Lake. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Veronica. You know, I think we're going to watch out. We don't get too sanctimonious about all this. I mean, the reality is that these cops generally are just working jamokes trying to do a job. They don't want to get shot. They don't want to get a knife in their face. Just like that pepper spray guy, he was off the wall. But that shows an individual acting irrationally. And so for these cops to show up in full military regalia with face coverings and so on, they're concerned about the one student that all of a sudden would go off the wall. So I think we have to be a little, you know, we have to be a little, take some common sense out of all this. I mean, if Davis campus wants to essentially, you know, down throttle the security force through hiring, they can do it. But the typical cop, the typical fella on the street, I mean, he comes from a military background. He's not a philosophy major, and he doesn't deal in solids. He's there to effectively do a job that he's been told to do under a protocol and discipline. And so I think we have to take that into consideration and be careful we don't get too sanctimonious about all this.
Okay, thanks, Doug. Those are some good points. Bob, why don't you respond?
Yeah, first of all, I should mention that I'm actually a full professor. I'm not an associate professor. It's a trivial point.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got that. I've got wrong information. Thanks.
Yeah, I think I haven't updated my bio for here. Anyway, how to respond to that? You know, one problem I think we do have is that the training is wrong. And now, I'm not an expert in police training, but I have been on enough of these media shows now and seen other law enforcement people interviewed who are still, the sheriff in Yolo County was on TV defending what happened and saying that, yes, this was proper protocol, and police are supposed to ask, you know, if they tell people to disperse and they don't disperse, and then the police say, if you don't disperse, you're going to be arrested, and you don't disperse, then the correct next step is to take out the pepper spray. And I think somehow police departments have been sold pepper spray and sold on the idea that pepper spray is somehow a benign weapon and a weapon of first resort.
That's an interesting take on it. I was just reading to prepare for this program. Deborah Bloom here at the UW-Madison has a piece, I think it's in Scientific American, about just how bad is pepper spray. And apparently, if you look at the heat-generating compounds within peppers, she says that the pepper spray that's used by police is sort of off the charts in terms of hotness, hotter, way hotter than the hottest pepper you could get, and that it, you know, can be a death risk in a small amount of people. And it's basically a very intense measure.
I would like to hear from Carla, if Carla could describe what the experiences of some of the students who were sprayed the worst actually was.
Yes, please, Carla. What have you heard?
Well, I know my good friend Ian cannot take a shower without his face burning still today. And I saw a girl lie flat who's having an asthma attack after being sprayed. We don't really know all the effects of pepper spray, and from what I saw, like, it's a very serious weapon. And you know, students, like, their eyes were burning and couldn't. One girl told me she couldn't see for 20 minutes after she had been sprayed. So there are very, very serious consequences to a weapon like pepper spray. And we don't understand all of the effects that they have on different people. So it definitely, it leaves a trace students are still, like, very much affected by what happened on Friday and are still feeling it on their faces and on their hands.
And this is Wednesday, so that's what, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They still can't take a shower without their face burning. So I think the public has this idea, at least I had this idea, that if you got pepper sprayed, you know, you were hurting for 20 minutes and then it was all done. And this is just absolutely not the case. So the idea that this weapon is a weapon of first resort that one uses on seated, nonviolent protesters who have made a choice to refuse an order to disperse as an act of First Amendment free speech. The idea that this is a protocol that's actually, you know, that this isn't some horrendous aberration, but actually protocol of many police departments in this country, this is shocking. And that there are law enforcement officials across this country who are willing to go on the air today and still defend that. I think Americans need to reflect on that very seriously.
And what about Doug's point that this may have just been one officer who, for whatever reason, got out of control, but that he doesn't reflect the mentality of the entire UC Davis police force, for instance, or, you know, police force anywhere else in the country?
Well, first of all, there were a lot of police there, and nobody did anything. Nobody intervened. Second, the police chief defended the actions later that day and the next day and the next day. And third, there are law enforcement people giving interviews to the media elsewhere defending this action. So, no, I don't think... I think Lieutenant Pike has some... He is definitely a bad apple. I mean, if you look at the video, it's just... I mean, I would like to see criminal charges filed against Lieutenant Pike. This man needs to be brought to justice. Apparently, many law enforcement people in this country took the view of the UC Davis police chief, saying that this was acceptable behavior. And we had a caller referring to the Seattle World Trade Organization protest. And without meaning in any way to imply that what the police did in Seattle was appropriate, it was totally inappropriate and it was horrendous. And but there were thousands and thousands of people in the street in Seattle, and it actually was at some level a tense situation. What happened at UC Davis was not a tense situation. It was 200 students in the campus quad. You know, 200 students doesn't even look very big in the campus quad. The campus quad is a big park. It's a handful of people. There was nothing tense or, the police chief afterwards said, well, these are split-second decisions that people have to make in a very tense environment. And I think people all over the world looked at that video and didn't see any split-second decisions being made.
We're talking this hour with Bob Ostertag. He is professor of technocultural studies at UC Davis. And Carla Orendorf, a junior at UC Davis, who was present at the pepper spraying incident on Friday. And we want to hear from you this hour. What do you think about police interactions with protesters, both at UC Davis and at the other Occupy protests that we're seeing? And what do you think the ideal role should be of police officers as they interact with protesters? Our number is 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert, back with you on Wednesday morning. I'm in today for Kathleen Dunn as we talk about the UC Davis pepper spraying incident and the aftermath there. And let's start off with an email from Todd. This is a comment, Todd in Madison. And he says, I think all police forces could learn from the various law enforcement agencies that were present at the protests in Wisconsin last February. The police were respectful to the protesters and didn't take on a threatening presence. They were dressed in their normal uniforms and were respectful to the fact that it was a peaceful protest. And he adds, these weren't just Madison police and Dane County deputies. There were officers from all over the state as well as state troopers. So a comment there from Todd in Madison. And we've got quite a few callers here, so let's see if we can get through those and begin with Matt in Middleton. Hi, Matt.
Good afternoon, or good morning.
Morning.
A few comments. I think first we have to look at the police response, and we look at Officer Pike. His actions in callously standing before them and spraying people, I see as no different than the Chinese military running over people in Tiananmen Square. It's the same mentality of having a lack of respect for other human beings that allows a person to do that. And that, those type of actions are already being reported in Cairo by the existing military rulers over there as legitimate actions to take against dissent that's happening within their country. And they point to America as their justification, saying if it's allowed in America, this is perfectly fine here. And the same comments were being made by Chinese journalists. We were riding home on the train. They were shocked that they thought the Chinese captions on the television, they were reading it wrong, saying this isn't possible in America. This has international ramifications at the national level for our image as Americans. And second, if we look at why the police responded this way, it was because of a request of the chancellor. So someone who doesn't necessarily enforce the law should also have some type of responsibility for the actions that they take. In Madison, where we had protests here, I live and work in Middleton and Madison, there were hundreds of thousands of people in the city. We did not see people getting tear gassed. We did not see them getting pepper sprayed. They were allowed inside of the Capitol. They were camping overnight. And the only time they were ever asked to leave is to clean at night, and they were allowed to come back. So if you look at the way Governor Walker responded to massively larger amounts of people and allowing them to protest against something that he was adamantly against, they were protesting him. You have to give credit to a leader who will allow that. But yet we look at Davis, which is a university campus. They wouldn't allow students to pitch a tent and maybe be there for up to a month, 2 months, and just say, well, this is what they're doing. They're allowed to do that. Instead, we have an authoritarian crackdown, and they don't back down until it's a worldwide incident. I don't understand the mentality of allowing that type of leader to stay in their position.
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Matt. A lot to chew on there. And Carla, what do you think? Maybe if you want to respond to Matt's first comments about the world watching what happens.
Yeah, I think, when he said that it was the chancellor who's making that decision, like, I feel like they're taking orders from higher up. And I just wanted to share an experience that I had the Wednesday before Friday, the Wednesday before the events happened at UC Davis. I was part of an action in San Francisco where we peacefully occupied Bank of America and to connect the UC Regents who sit on the boards of corporate banks in America. And the response that we got from the San Francisco Police Department was excellent. They knew how to work with us, and they arrested us, and none of us resisted. We complied, and I had a really, I don't have any complaints with the way that I was treated. So they, there are mechanisms in place, like the police can respond appropriately in these situations. And I feel like what had happened, was far from that. This is a global issue.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And Matt, thank you for that call. And we move next to Judy, joining us from Stillwater, Minnesota. Hi, Judy.
Hi. I want to thank you so much, Veronica, for this extremely important conversation.
Glad you like it.
Yeah. And I just I have a comment to make. But first, I want to urge all your readers to get the books of Thomas Paine. It's perfect reading for everybody right now. But yesterday, I was listening to the Tom Hartman Show, and they had a report about a woman, I believe it was in Seattle, Washington, and she was trying to resist police arrest, begging them to stop because she was pregnant, and they struck her twice with their billy clubs in her belly. She went to the hospital. She lost her baby.
Hmm.
Now, I think this is murder myself, and I think that we're going to be hearing a lot more about this, but it just goes to show you that instead of this ramping down, I'm afraid it's going to ramp up and get worse before it gets better. And I suspect that a lot of this, the new technology with pepper spray, and there's a sound box that they drag out that drives your ears crazy, and God knows what. I think all these new inventions came about thanks to our tax dollars going into Homeland Security under George Bush and Cheney. And I'd like to hear what, if Carla knows anything about this pregnant woman who lost her baby incident.
I did hear about that, and I agree that there will only be more stories about violence. Just, you know, I feel like we're in a very precarious situation right now, and I think we really need to reach deep and think about what this means, you know, when a woman loses her child like that, or when a student is terrorized for what they believe. Like, these are very, very serious concerns to me. And I feel like, you know, we've gotten to the point where we are defending systems of violence over people at this point, and that you know, that isn't just in the actions of one or two, you know, law enforcement officers. This is a much larger issue, and I think, I was very sad to hear about that.
All right. Well, thank you, Judy. And I haven't heard that story. If that's true, and that's a horrible story, and I'm hoping that we can figure out ways through dialogues like this to try to prevent things like that happening, and hopefully prevent situations from unraveling as we examine what the police role should be in occasions like this, and what goes wrong, and how to prevent that. So let's get another perspective. This is Paul joining us from Austin. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi.
I just wanted to respond to one of your previous callers who called in and compared Lieutenant Pike to a tank driver in Tiananmen Square. I thought that was a bit of an egregious exaggeration. The police were called in by the chancellor, who was most likely trying to protect the school, the community, and the public. And I think that this whole scenario has sort of turned and gotten away from the Occupy movement and become an attack on the law enforcement community. And I think it would be, I'm curious to see how they could then use this scenario to further the movement rather than have a backlash against the police who are defending it. And I'll take the responses off there.
Well, Paul, what do you think about how it's been going so far? This incident obviously has been upsetting to a lot of people. But what do you think about what we're seeing so far?
About what? I'm sorry.
About the way the police are interacting with protesters. Do you think overall that things are going well, or do you think there are bumps?
Overall, things are going well, and I think that for the most part, like Lieutenant Pike may or may not have made a snap decision, which has obviously blown up, but he's there to protect the people, to protect the school, at the request of the chancellor, and I feel like marginalizing Lieutenant Pike for his actions cannot be, you can't take that as the representative of the entire law enforcement community across the nation, who I think have done an outstanding job, for the most part, of staying out of the way and allowing people to peacefully protest.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your thoughts, Paul. And Bob, let's go to you next because we're about out of time. You've got about 30 seconds to respond.
Well, I would say that your caller is right that the police are not solely to blame. We haven't mentioned the UC Berkeley chancellor who last week said that students linking arms was a violent act that justified police violence in return. So, yes, we do have to look beyond just the police at our political authorities and the authorities at our universities. The idea that linking arms is a violent act is absurd.
And I'm sorry, Bob, we have to leave it there. But Bob and Carla, I so appreciate your time this morning. Thank you for being on and talking about this with us.
Thank you so much.
Bob Ostertag, a professor of technocultural studies at UC Davis, and Carla Orendorf, a junior there at UC Davis. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.